Right, welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch, and joining me to unpack your stock-related questions this evening are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon. Be sure to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email us at stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks so much for your time, gentlemen. Actually, it just dawned on me that we are heading towards the end of May and into the second half of the year. And so there have been quite a lot of interesting movements happening in the local markets and also offshore. So, Jonathan, I actually just want to start with you, just so you can give us an overview of the year-to-date performances on the JSE and also the offshore indices.
So I always like to look at it to see where we are for the year. Our market generally is up a few percent. Top 40 is up 6.7%. All share up 4.8%. Industrial 25. Now, here's the interesting one, and I think this kind of skewed or helped the top 40 and all share up 17.6%. And I think you can look at shares like Naspers and Richemont, just to name a couple, and Prosus. But having said that, two of the other big indices that came under pressure this year so far have been resources, where we've seen the heavyweight resource companies easing back due to lower resource prices. And then financials down 6%. Now, a month ago, financials were flat. But then with this whole debacle with the Rand and interest rates going up in the last month, it actually down 6%. So a lot of that's come over the past 4 to 5 weeks, thereabouts. So that's the local market. On a whole, we're up, but it's a bit mixed there. And then I also looked at, interestingly enough, some of those big offshore indices, particularly the American indices. The Dow's flat for the year. The S&P's up 9.5%. And how's this? The NASDAQ's up 23.9%.
Wow.
And I think that's largely attributable to all the hype about AI. So those offshore markets looking good in America this year. I looked at the FTSE. The FTSE's only up 2.3%. So like I say, everything a little bit firmer on the local front, but kind of skewed because resources easier and financials also easier.
Yeah, really, really quite interesting when you put all of that into context, because, for example, you see the financials and that really gives you an idea of the pressure that SA Inc. has taken in the last few weeks, and seeing Industrial 25 up, really seeing the Rand hedge benefits of those stocks in that index. Gary, at this point, because I know there's been a debate about this, whether you go for SA Inc. or whether you go for these Rand hedge stocks. Should that be a debate?
Yeah, of course that should be a debate. I think it's quite a fundamental debate in our market, and it's a good debate. You know, and it really depends, I suppose it depends on who you are and why you're investing in a local portfolio. And it's a debate that we actually have on in our kind of research team all the time. You know, should you be trying to make a local portfolio into an offshore portfolio just because you think that that's where the best performance is going to be? Or should you build an offshore portfolio if you believe that the Rand is going to weaken, and should your portfolio be doing that internationally? Because, I mean, while we do have some spectacular Rand hedge counters, and it's going to, you know, if you're trapped within the Regulation 28 framework and you've got have X amount of your portfolio positioned locally, then great. I mean, pile into the likes of Richemont and, you know, some of the mining companies that obviously, you know, serve as Rand hedges. Go for things like British American Tobacco, even though it's kind of like a twilight industry. I mean, it's kind of an ex-growth company and maybe looks more like a dividend player, because you'll get the big translational effect if the currency weakens, which is what we've seen. My feeling is that if you're going to go offshore, let's go offshore properly. Let's go and do your clearance and take it out, or go and structure structure a trust overseas, do whatever you need to do, but actually take your money out, because then you're not limited to the small universe of international stocks locally. You have the whole world that you can go and invest in. Even if you're a company or a trust, I mean, you can use asset swaps to go and invest internationally, and you can go and buy the most exciting companies in the world. Jonathan was talking about the AI theme earlier. I mean, you can go and express some really interesting AI views overseas that you can't do on the local exchange. I mean, maybe the best that you can get is something like Naspers or Prosus in that basket. But what you can express in the local portfolio is you can go and look for really interesting companies that are at a very deep discount that are very cheap, and valuation obviously plays a role. So my feeling is use your local portfolio to do local things. It's what it's there for. That's why it's a local portfolio. Mm. I'm talking about discretionary money that you've paid tax on and is outside of the system already. If you're looking to express a local view, and then the offshore view, of course, just go offshore. And that comes down to your personal preference. Where do I think you're going to do better? I mean, I think our client base has kind of spoken with their feet, because about 85% of our assets sit internationally. That's where clients are interested in investing at the moment, and that's where the returns have been generated. And it's not to say that there aren't very interesting companies on the local exchange and they're not at a deep discount. I think the problem is people just don't see the catalyst for what is going to make these shares re-rate. So they struggle to go and invest in. I mean, we put out a buy on Astral recently, and it's, no one takes that up. They might look at it and go, oh, well, commodity prices are falling and everything is wonderful. But everyone goes, but it's a chicken producer in South Africa that has no power. Why would I invest in that instead of going and investing in NVIDIA that goes up 25% overnight? I mean, that's unfortunately how the retail public views shares. So I do think there's opportunities in both segments, but it depends on who you are and it depends on the view that you're trying to express.
I'm actually quite interested, just before we go to the questions, you talk about NVIDIA and, of course, the big optimism that we've seen on it and all these AI stocks. Jonathan, are there any concerns that we might get to some sort of bubble in that tech sector, looking at the boost that AI, or the anticipation of returns that investors are anticipating in these stocks because of AI?
Look, I think there always will be a concern of a bubble, and things move so quickly in such a short space of time. You know, it boils down to how much can the AI businesses actually generate in terms of cash and earnings for those companies. So if it is just about hype, which I don't know whether it is or isn't just yet at the moment, well then sure, that it could reach bubble territory. We saw what happened with the tech shares during COVID, those 2 years of COVID from 2020 to 2021. A lot of it was hyped up, where you saw these PEs just going through the roof and the earnings just weren't keeping up. That all started unraveling early last year. Whether the AI story is going to be the same as anyone's guess, time will tell. But I think, one needs to look at the profitability of these AI companies going forward, and whether or not they're going to run out of steam because the earnings just don't follow through and the share prices keep going up. Then I would say, yes, a bubble could be coming. But one needs to watch those numbers of these companies.
Gary, I feel like you have something to add there.
Well, I think, with something like AI, there's a wonderful interview with Sam Altman where it was early in, when they were developing OpenAI, and they said, but, how are you going to make money off this AI thing? What's your revenue model on it? How are you going to sell it? And he said, well, when we finish building this, we don't need a revenue model. We're literally going to ask the AI how to make money, and that will make money. Wow. And I think, when you're investing in a theme like this, it's so broad. It's so game changing. I mean, people have been talking about AI as, it's not even, the internet or the cell phone. This is like the discovery of fire. It can be that big. And when you've got something that big, I think it's difficult to look at profitability too early in these companies, because there's obviously a lot of dev spend, there's a lot of jostling in the market, and they are typically growth stocks as well. So I mean, you're betting on the future of what these big tech companies are able to develop. It's not going to be kind of like the revenue coming through now. And I think if you're going to wait for the profitability to come through, I think it might be too late to capture the really exciting bargains. But as to, I think to Jonathan's point, exactly though, is It is early days. It's very early days. And we have seen big run-ups in these share prices very, very quickly. Longer term, I think we are fairly convinced on the AI theme. I think this is very different from crypto. This is very different from marijuana stocks or some of the other fads that we've seen, because you can see the practical application of it immediately. I mean, we already you can see how using something like ChatGPT in everyday life will triple your productivity, and you're using it not to skin it and use it, but to get it to write something, understand the ideas, and you're writing a job spec, for example, and then you run it through ChatGPT, it spits out, oh, that's not quite right. You tweak two, three, or four words. But what it would have taken you 2 hours takes you 10 minutes. Think of the productivity gains this can be. The application isn't only going to be in the underlying companies that are developing it, the chip makers and the big data companies, and I mean, we can go through the different ways to express the theme, but it's going to be in the economy as a whole. We're struggling with inflation at the moment, and what was one of the biggest drivers of deflation is an improvement in technology. This literally has the ability to solve some of our inflationary problems as well. So it's a, I think, a very exciting theme. But how to express it, I'll leave it that for my stock.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, let's get to the questions. Not a lot of them today. But of course, as expected, there's a question on Telkom. We did see that share price surge about 11% today. With Telkom's absolute dismal performance, surely investors cannot be buying the stock in the manner in which has occurred in the last two trading sessions. Where is the value in the stock, and why such buying interest amid such dismal results and outlook? And of course, I guess that points to that deal that might be taking place with a 35% stake. There's a consortium that's trying to go after that stake that's led by former Telkom CEO Sipho Maseko's investment vehicle Afrifund, together with a Mauritius-based company that is backed by the PIC. So, Jonathan, your take on how the markets have reacted? Why so much buying today?
Well, when there's an announcement that someone's looking at, or someone, a consortium is looking to buy 35% of your company, the share price will go up, no matter who's involved. Now, the PIC are involved. They've got the backing, or that they are backing this deal. And the big thing in my mind is that the previous CEO, Sipho Maseko, who really did a sterling job in actually turning Telkom around a couple of years back, he knows the company backwards. So he knows what's there. He knows what he can do going forward and unlock value. So it does make a lot of sense. As you mentioned, Telkom has been struggling the past 18 to 24 months. I think they've been cannibalized by their competitors, as well as they're quite heavily involved in a so-called, well, one can call it a bit of a sunset type of business, where everything else is taking over from a technology perspective. But I think this is a good thing for shareholders, and you might still see some more activity here in terms of a bit of speculation on the share price. But I think it's good. I think it, if there is a deal that happens and goes through, it will be good for Telkom ultimately, and for its shareholders, because something needs to happen here. It can't just, keep chugging along as it has in the last year or two, because it really won't do much and probably just keep going down if nothing happens or nothing changes.
But of course, before this, MTN had been interested. Gary, does this completely take MTN out? What does it mean in terms of MTN and that bid?
Well, MTN has said at a certain price they would be interested in bidding once again. Following this kind of leaked announcement, if you want to put it that way, around the potential deal with Telkom, they were reached out and declined to comment. So we don't know how MTN is feeling about it at this stage. And I get the sense that maybe behind closed doors they're scrambling, going, wait a minute, what's going on here? Will you be our eye on those assets? And maybe that's where some of the excitement is coming from. If this does spark a bidding war, that'll be great for shareholders. I mean, as Jonathan was saying, a big buyer of 35% of the company will always make share prices go up. I imagine two big buyers. So definitely, I can see where the excitement is coming from, but no comment from MTN as yet, or at least no comment that I've seen.
Well, let's move on to more questions. There's a question here on City Lodge. After a very positive last month, today has seen a loss of some of these gains. Is this attributable to the massive dilution of City Lodge? I've read of unsophisticated punters who sell at any sign of gains. Also looking at the company's history, the stock prices fall off began from early 2018. Is the panel aware of the reasons for this? COVID and the rights issue occurred after this. Why did the stock decline as such between 2018 and 2020? That's City Lodge. Jonathan?
City Lodge was a company that took a lot of pain during COVID, or when the COVID outbreak occurred, being involved in operating hotels and basically couldn't earn revenue because people couldn't move, people couldn't stay in lodges and so forth. So they took a huge, huge knock, had a big rights issue at the time to shore up their balance sheet. But having said that, they seem to have come through quite well out of the COVID lockdown situation. So their results, I think their results for December, I think was either December or February year end, I'm not sure, but they actually were very good results. And if I'm not mistaken, they got their occupancy level up to 57%, which is very good. And we've seen the share price really have quite a big jump back to the levels that it was in January, sitting at about 5 Rand a share. So I think City Lodge, you know, we would want to see those occupancy levels being maintained at about these levels, or even better, go beyond 60%. We can see the sustainability of the numbers coming through. And I actually think it's a good business. We just need to see the tourism sector coming back, as well as corporate events and corporate people moving into these hotels as they were prior to COVID.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the fundamentals actually are good. They are improving. But just looking at that share price, is it that the share price is not following the fundamentals at this point? And maybe could a big worry be just the dilution that was caused by that rights issue, Gary?
I think it definitely could be a worry. I think just an asset base, you know, so focused in South Africa could be a worry as well. And it's, I think, you know, looking at kind of a tightening monetary policy framework, you know, this is not good for the economy, and City Lodge is going to suffer on the back of that. That's at a much weaker rand. Maybe we'll see some international tourists flowing into the country. I think maybe one of the more optimistic things that we are seeing on City Lodge, although the share price hasn't really responded to it, there are reports out that you know, two kind of unlisted subsidiaries, or at least closely associated companies of Togosan Gaming, are sniffing around and starting to buy up stock. We're talking about big deals being done for chunks of Telkom earlier. You know, who knows what's happening, you know, behind closed doors with Togosan Gaming, and potentially are they returning to the hotel space? And that could be very exciting for a stock price. It hasn't moved yet on the back of that. And I mean, you know, there's reports that they're up to around a 5% holding. It's not sitting on the official shareholder register, I've just checked. So, you know, having a look at it, I mean, you know, at around 5%, you've got like 5% holding by 91, then Coronation at 7.5, PIC at 9, and then this HS Investments Proprietary, which is the private company with links to Tsogo, sitting at 10% of the shareholding, and Alan Gray, the biggest shareholder, at 12%. So, you know, it's kind of like this, it's kind of going on behind the scenes, and I think that could be quite exciting for the share price. But I don't know. I think Jonathan's right. Like it's a tough. The results haven't been bad, but it's a business that took a huge amount of pain over COVID, and South Africa is a very, very difficult place to operate at the moment. And I think that's maybe where the pessimism around the share price is coming from. But that's not to say that maybe some of the smart money isn't already snapping up shares.
Yeah, and actually, some concerns of the downbeat economic environment have come through after the Zeta results as well. If whether the economy is conducive for their business model. There's a question here on REITs. High Prop NEPI and the Beatdown Redefine. Any thoughts on those? High prop NEPI and Redefine, and why Redefine is kind of the laggard here? Jonathan?
So I think Redefine, it simply boils down to the results. If one looks at the results, they're the only one out of all of those that's actually struggling. And that's why the share price has been under pressure, as it has been. Just a general comment on REITs. I think Gary touched on it a short while ago, talking about City Lodge. These companies have got a very tough environment to deal with, especially with load shedding. You know, they've got to put in place, you know, alternative energy sources, which costs a lot of money, to get over this load shedding. And that ultimately, I guess, gets passed on to the tenants that occupy their spaces. So it's a very difficult space to be in. And I guess it's relevant purely from a South African perspective. So probably won't be relevant for NEPI Rock, for NEPI, but certainly for the other local REITs. I think Hyprop came out with far better numbers. NEPI Rockcastle did the same. They came out with great numbers, but Redefine's been struggling. And I guess it boils down to the, you know, your viewers asking about why is the price lagging. It boils down to the numbers. So I think Redefine, out of all of those, has been struggling, and they're in a tough space.
Yeah. Gary, on your side, Hyprop, NEPI, and Redefine?
Well, yeah, I think there's something that just kind of triggered. Jonathan was talking about the idea that they, you know, they're facing load shedding, a lot of these big property companies. So one interesting idea that I mean, we've had a look at, we kind of introduced it to some of our larger clients as well, larger retail clients, that is the whole Section 12B solar tax exemption as well. So a lot of these companies, you know, you can essentially structure investments around it. You put solar on the roofs, you essentially sell electricity to the company, and then you get, you know, 125% tax rebate. It's quite an interesting investment thesis, you know, to solve the REITs problem and to benefit from the beneficial tax dispensation as well. So that's something to have a look at. But looking at the underlying REITs, you know, I think the performance, you know, as Johnson says, from the underlying performance, yes, to an extent that does explain the moves. But then you know, the absolute share price performance. So if you look at it, it also makes sense. So NEPI up just under 10% for the year, but NEPI is mainly you know, shopping centers in Eastern Europe. And I mean, I was fortunate enough to go to Romania, Romania and Poland in the last couple of years. And Romania a little bit more stagnant, but Poland, I mean, absolutely, you know, massive amounts of development around Warsaw. You walk around and they're building shopping centers everywhere. It's quite an exciting, you know, you get the sense that it's quite an exciting place from a construction point of view. You know, I think incomes are rising in those countries as well. So there's a good case to be made. But again, it comes also down to the rand hedge case. I mean, it's serving as a rand hedge because the assets are offshore. You know, as I said, Hyprop, you know, also kind of focused very much on retail, like 95% of their portfolio is in retail. And that doing a lot better than you know, companies with exposure to, let's say, the more commercial real estate, the office spaces. People are still working from home. Residential has still changed. And Hyprop down 10% for the year. But as you said, Redefine, the one struggling the most, down 26% year to date. Very, very tough environment, and very tough for listed property companies when interest rates are potentially still rising. So when the interest rate cycle turns, I think these could become very, very exciting, you know, when we maybe turn around some of our policies as well locally, and South Africa becomes more investment friendly. Also good.
All right. Talking about good investments, let's get to your stock picks. Gentlemen, I think we have about a minute. For the both of you, Jonathan, what will it be?
Okay, so I'm going to go with a big company listed in the US. It's called Berkshire Hathaway, run by Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, both well into their 90s. Company's worth $700 billion. Convert that into rands, it's ridiculous numbers, quite frankly. But I mean, he has a company that's it's a holding company that's involved in insurance, that's involved in transport in terms of its railway system and its railway business through Burlington, Northern Santa Fe. It's involved in utilities and energy. It's also involved in distribution and wholesale and manufacturing. So it's a great company to own if you believe in that American economy over the long term. Doesn't pay a dividend, but it's, I guess, in South Africa, you've got the likes of Remgro, historically a big industrial company, which is a minnow relative to Berkshire, but this is the equivalent in America. And it's a company that that we still fancy, and one can keep buying them over time.
All right. On your side, Gary, quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. I'm going to cheat a little bit here. I'm going to go with the AI theme and give you three stocks. So,
Okay.
yeah, we like the whole AI theme. As much as we've seen a recovery in tech, one, if US interest rates come down, I think tech can turn around very, very quickly. But where I think you're going to benefit the most from AI is anyone with these large data sets of essentially private information. So the one company that's very, very obvious, something like Meta. Gotta have Meta, just everyone's data. Once you apply these large language modules and the AI kind of mining that data, I think what's going to come out in terms of the strength of their AI modules is going to be exceptional. Then you've got to take Google as well, because also huge amounts of data that Google captures, but also DeepMind and the DeepMind AI shop is just streaks ahead of the rest. It's got to be one of the most cutting-edge technologies. And then an interesting AI play that I was chatting to about with one of the tech analysts recently as well is the US banks, so either JP Morgan or Citibank. Put those three together. Why? Because they also have incredible data sets on their customers that they will be able to use to train these modules. And I'm not talking about, hey, when I phone a bank, I'm going to get a nice robotic person on the other end that'll be able to guide me through the transactions I need to do on their account. I'm actually talking about just understanding their customers better and being able to provide banking services
All
and
right.
risk metrics better using machine learning. So those three, stick them in a basket. That's what I'm buying.
All right. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for your time and your analysis today. That's it from Stockwatch this evening. Thanks to our guests, Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon. After this, I bring you the close with Bloomberg.
Thank you.